We'll go on to the third case. And that is 073585, WMS Gaming versus WPC Production Limited and Party Gaming. Do you feel lonely, Mr. Davis?
Excuse me.
I said, do you feel lonely?
I do indeed, Your Honor. I do indeed. May it please the Court, my name is Theodore Davis, and I represent the appellant in this matter, WMS Gaming. I am joined at counsel's table by our client's in-house counsel, Mr. Jeff Michelle. Your Honors, WMS has this morning submitted a written motion at the filing desk for leave to identify and correct certain scrivener's errors that crept into our citations to the record in this in our brief. And with the panel's permission, I'd like to identify those at this point. Specifically, references to page 190 of the appendix should be to page 191. References to 193 should be to 194. References to 327 should be to 328.
Say that again, 328?
I'm sorry, references to 327.
Oh, okay.
Should be to 328. With one exception, references to page 277 should be to 278. And the one exception is that a cite on page 270, cite to page 277 of the appendix on page 23 of the brief should be to page 326. And needless to say, I apologize to the court and its personnel for these errors. Your Honors, this action began as an actively litigated matter before the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board in the United States Patent and Trademark Office, and it led to a district court action for trademark infringement and unfair competition. This appeal is from the district court's entry of a default judgment, finding
Forgive me, but there's so little time that I think we better get to some specific questions, like, why aren't you overreaching when you say you're entitled to the defendant's total profits from U.S. gaming operations in 2005 and 2006? In other words, why weren't you obliged to at least make some estimate of what portion of those profits were attributable to infringing games as opposed to the non-infringing games?
Your Honor, Section 35 of the Lanham Act and the common law both distinguish between awards of the plaintiff's actual damages, which is a legal remedy, and the equitable remedy of an accounting of the defendant's profits.
I wanted to find out more from you about what you think the practical difference is between those two, because I note that Rule 55B does seem to provide for, among other things, an accounting, if that's what the court feels is necessary when the time comes to enter judgment by default as opposed to entering the initial default. Did the judge refuse to give you a hearing on the accounting that you want?
We have not appeared before the court to argue that particular issue. It's only been addressed in the written pleadings. But to address Your Honor's question, we don't mean to suggest that a prevailing trademark plaintiff is excused from making any sort of factual showing. However, there is a distinction between the two remedies, and the distinction is based on the information that is available to the parties. In the case of a plaintiff's own actual damages, the plaintiff is in possession of the relevant information, and therefore the law quite properly requires the plaintiff to prove those actual damages with some degree of certainty. In the context of an accounting of the defendant's profits, however, it is the defendant that is in possession of the information that would allow a prevailing plaintiff to distinguish between revenues attributable to infringing uses and non-infringing uses.
So it's your position that if the defendants had 100 games and only one was infringing, you'd be entitled to its profits on all 100 games unless and until the defendants show what percentage of its profits were attributable to the one infringing game? Is that your position?
Well, Your Honor, we believe the law is clear that as between the parties, if the issue is apportionment and the plaintiff does not have access to that information, either because the defendant has not participated in discovery or the defendant's own record keeping makes an apportionment impossible, then the risk of that apportionment properly lies with the defendant.
So let me ask you two questions about that, because if you had, if the defendants weren't located in Gibraltar, suppose the defendants were just a Texas corporation or something, I presume you might have tried to conduct some sort of ancillary discovery of the defendants to find out whether it's, you know, 99 games or one game or however many games it is. In Gibraltar, obviously, you've got an entirely different layer of problems trying to obtain evidence that's located outside the United States. And you know that because you used the Hague Service Convention initially to serve them. There is also, of course, a Hague Evidence Convention. Was there ever any effort to use compulsory process to find this information out?
Your Honor, there was not before the default judgment was entered. There was discovery served in the initial administrative proceeding before the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board, but that was not responded to by, in that case, there was only one of the two appellees that was a party to that case, but that party did not respond to the discovery in that action.
Okay, so you think the only thing that's left you is this burden-shifting approach that the trademark laws acknowledge?
Your Honor, we believe that the district court committed clear legal error by placing the burden of apportionment on the plaintiff as opposed to the party that actually has the information.
So let me ask you this. You know, in 05, what you requested was 83 times more than you did for the 04 profits. In 06, it was 237 times. Are you, I mean, I guess in your view, nothing would be excessive profits. I mean, you would always go for what are the total profits. I mean, do we have no obligation to make sure it's apportioned? Is that what you're saying? And this alternative measure of profits where you talked about 144% of revenue in 05 and 278% of revenue, that increase in 06, that theory wasn't posited to the district court as an alternative, was it? Because that is another way to measure, and it seems to me that's tied a little more to something rational.
Your Honor is absolutely correct. We do not seek, nor do we believe the law supports, an accounting of the entirety of a defendant's profits. We believe that plaintiffs have the obligation to narrow that down as best they can.
But you haven't tied it to specifically to infringing games in this instance, have you?
Your Honor, we have narrowed it down to the unit responsible for the infringing games, and that is, quite frankly, as far as we can take it. We have given the defendants the benefit of the doubt by calculating a profit margin, which the district court credited.
So you excluded the rest of the world, and this would be the casino division, is that right, that you are focusing on? What's the other division?
The other primary division is poker, but yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
So you exclude the rest of the world, you exclude poker. You're left with casino, but within casino, I take it there, those annual reports or whatever they were that you put in the appendices don't break it down by game.
Mm-hmm. That's correct, Your Honor. To respond to Your Honor's initial question, yes, there is a percentage increase from year to year, but to place that in perspective, the defendant's revenues increased during that first year by 144% and in the second year by 278%.
Why weren't you obliged to make the alternative arguments that you made in your motion for reconsideration in your original submission? I mean, you know, Judge Manning said too late.
Correct. That is exactly what the district court did. But as we point out in our brief, Rule 59E is intended to allow litigants to respond to unanticipated errors or unanticipated applications of the law by a district court. And we believe that the situation is very clearly covered by Sosby v. Astrew, and in which Judge Wood's opinion for this court recognized that this is a situation in which Rule 59E is intended to apply. But yes, Your Honor, we did not anticipate that the 2004 accounting would be used as a baseline for the second and the third year simply because different trademarks were at issue. There was a different magnitude of infringement at issue as well.
Well, this was a booming business until Congress intervened with the UIGA, or whatever you pronounce that, U-I-G-E-A. So I can see that the baseline was changing.
I submit, Your Honor, it remains a booming business outside of the United States. See, my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Oh, well, thank you very much, Mr. Davis. The case will be taken under advisement.